I feel so privileged to be here with my colleagues and with all of you today. I had a chance to meet some of you before the luncheon, and I'd love to stay the weekend, not because of the beach, but because you could give me so much advice and experience. You're a distinguished group. You've had such distinguished speakers before you in the past. I hope I can bring something to you today that's a little thought-provoking. So the topic is the importance of business and free enterprise and how they contribute to a vibrant society. And I hope I would get an amen from this group right now. All right, excellent. I hope that we can manifest that over the next few minutes in some of the assertions that I want to make. So let me start with where I'm coming from. Admittedly, my perspective is from a career in business, 35 years, corporate investment banking, and now with Edward Jones for 22 marvelous years, and then watching my parents operate in the business world. My father was a CEO of a publicly traded company, so the daddy-daughter CEO thing is kind of a fun story. What I'm going to share today are some assertions about business for good is good for business. Now, these are not absolutes, but I do think that they're important. They mean something today in a world with thorny problems and great opportunity. I think there is great goodness in the marriage of democratic ideals and the free market system. We're right now seeing a stark juxtaposition of that notion in the form of authoritarianism and repudiation of free market tools in favor of oligarchy. I know which one I'm voting for. So let me tell you a little bit more about the corner of the world that I'm coming from. Edward Jones, as David said, is the largest privately held financial services firm in our industry. We don't measure ourselves just by the numbers and the size, but we are a Fortune 500 company. We have 19,000 financial advisors in two countries. We're in the top one, two, or three in terms of number of financial advisors. We serve more than 7 million clients and over 3,000 communities throughout North America, who allow us to care for $1.8 trillion of their assets. We started 100 years ago in St. Louis, and today we have a brick and mortar location in two-thirds of the counties of the United States, all 10 provinces in Canada, and we have a client in every county but one in the U.S., Loving County, Texas. If there are any Texans here, has 62 people in the county. It's the only county in America we don't have a client in. We're going to go fix that soon. So we are North American in scope, and we have seen financial markets in good and bad businesses to invest in play out over 100 years. I am the sixth managing partner in that 100 years, and I've been schooled and am actively studying all the time the lessons of great leaders and leadership. So as the managing partner of Edward Jones, I consider it is my job to do just two things: set the ambition level of the organization and create the conditions that enable that ambition and that vision to be reached. Our vision for the future is about growing our impact. We've done a pretty good job of that for 100 years. But here's the thing. There are 40 million investors in North America that think, behave, and invest like the serious long-term investor that David talked about. Those investors are over five generations, and they're seeking advice and need advice more than ever. So you can see that when we state an ambition of moving from 7 million clients to an addressable market of 40 million families, that is an ambition indeed. But our ambitions extend not from things that are about us, but what we want to do in the world. We took a moment in 2020 to explicitly state our purpose, our why for being. We partner for positive impact to improve the lives of our clients and colleagues and together better our communities and society. Big ambition. It's broadly impactful, and it is crystal clear to us. It's the lens through which we make all of our decisions. And this is important, and it's becoming more important. This is not about what we do. This is why we do it. To what end do our 50,000 colleagues get up every morning to go serve our clients? Now, what we do does extend from our why. And what we do for our clients is essentially we work with them, family by family, person by person, to understand what it is that's most important to them and then help them build unique plans to achieve those goals and many times to achieve possibility in their lives that they didn't even know was available. And when times are stressful and anxiety is high, we help them stay on track. So by doing that, we provide this kind of opportunity, possibilities in millions of people's lives, and we want to do that for at least 100 more years. So we believe that the work that we do matters. Let me give you a little statistic. The Federal Reserve, and I am very proud to be on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank in St. Louis. The Federal Reserve estimates that it costs more than $1 million to retire at age 65 today. And retirement is one goal that we help our clients and their families with. Our own research that was conducted in partnership with an organization called AgeWave finds that 63% of men and 46% of women today are confident about their retirement savings. So with that window into the preparedness of our citizens for the future, it's pretty obvious that the work that our firm does for people has profound value. So here's the connection to the capital markets and the business world. I think you already know what that connection is. We would not be able to provide the service that we do or have the positive impact on millions of lives that we want to have without the capital markets, without the free market system, without good business. We help our investors participate in the investment in capital markets, growing their own wealth and possibility by investing in good business through our incredible free market system. So I fundamentally believe that businesses prosper and are rewarded for just two things. They're simple, but it's really profound. The first is innovation, and the second is relationships. So think about it. Innovation are the good ideas, the better ideas that people want to buy or they want to experience because it does something good for them in their lives. And relationship, trust is the root of that. Trust by the consuming public, as well as every other stakeholder that gives us our license to operate. So that's the people who work for us. That's the communities where we do our business. That's the regulators who oversee us. Trust in our brand, what we stand for, how we manage our resources, how we treat the environment, why we do what we do and what we do. Trust. Relationship is the lubricant for good business and what business can do for good in the world. Okay, so I had an amen before. I think I probably still have an amen. But here's a cold, hard truth about something. Let's examine what I just said through the lens of three assertions that I want to make, because the idea of business as propelling and good is being re-examined right now. Global and national conditions and events have caused this re-examination of the merits of capitalism. Income gaps continue to grow. Artificial intelligence and automation are resulting in major shifts in skills needed for many jobs. There's also the gig economy, giving workers a new way of working and a whole lot of power about agency in their own lives. And the full ramifications of all those things and so many more, those are still being determined. There's a lot more that we could say about that, but I think you know the conversation about some of these challenges to the free market system and to capitalism. Here's another one. The Edelman Trust Barometer found that 56% of people around the world believe that capitalism does more harm than good as it exists today. I heard an oh boy. I react that way too. That is a very sobering statement, isn't it? But here's what I noticed about that research question. Did you notice that the end of that question, that the end of that statement was, as it exists today? So interestingly, and this is the other thing that's a bit of a happier path, recent research from the same organization, Edelman Trust Barometer, shows that businesses are more greatly trusted than they ever have been through this pandemic period based on what consumers saw business do to make a difference. But people are saying, there are some people who are saying that capitalism is harmful as it exists today. And I think there's promise in that phrase. It implies a belief that capitalism in and of itself isn't the issue. It implies that capitalism, when working at its best, can work for more people. That's a belief that we espouse and that we are really optimistic about at Edward Jones. Capitalism unleashes innovation and it prospers on trust. The free market system has potential to do good for all, and it's going to take intentional leadership to manifest that opportunity. So I've got three assertions for you about the goodness of business and capitalism. I think there are a lot more assertions that we could make, but I want to assert these three ideas, and with each, I want to leave us with a question hanging in the air. What could we do better to make these three powerfully good attributes better? To leverage and enable more business to do better and to do better for more. My overall assertion is that when that happens, innovation, trust, prosperity, and opportunity abound. This is not a zero-sum game. Democracy and the free market system are more powerful when we think about that question. What can we do to make these assertions better, to make these things more true? So here's my first one. The first truth is that when it's working, capitalism is a win-win cycle that can increase opportunity and prosperity for everybody. It's based on the principle that free markets allocate efficiently resources, and innovation is rewarded because money is flowing to really good ideas. Good ideas because we as consumers say they're good ideas. So as companies do well and grow, they drive growth of the economy as a whole. The dynamic in turn benefits individuals and families when businesses drive income growth, create jobs, and provide even better goods and services than we had before. There's considerable proof of the power of capital markets. Just look at the way the U.S. economy responded to the pandemic. Supply chains in almost every industry were disrupted, and there's still some disruption there, but grocery store shelves were still stocked. In fact, parts of our economy thrived because of the pandemic, because of their innovation through that. We saw factories redeployed to assemble PPE, and the innovation as well as the sense of responsibility to serve that I believe is inherent in the free market system helped this country keep running. Take a longer view of the benefits of the capital market system. University of Chicago economist Deidre McCloskey estimates that the average human in 1800, just a couple hundred years ago, lived on the equivalent of $3 a day. And that had been the case back to the year one. But then comes along the Industrial Revolution, evolving with the development of U.S.-style capitalism. And by 2010, just a couple hundred years later, versus the arc of that millennium, the average American was making $120 a day. That 40-fold increase in average income was achieved in two centuries after it had nearly not budged for 2,000 years. So this data also puts something really important into perspective. This marriage of democracy and the free market system, it's kind of a new thing. It's a newest notion, and I don't want to be too glib about this, but it's clear that we're still working out some of the kinks in this grand and important innovation of governance and markets. I mentioned some of the ways that folks are concerned about capitalism. Those concerns often turn on the how opportunity is provided more equitably. Some might make the argument that capitalism allows too much money to gather in the accounts of the very few. Now, to be sure, there is income inequality and inequity in our country, and it's an issue, and it's one that we at Edward Jones are actively trying to address. But I don't think it's correct to say that capitalism prevents those with more everyday income from benefiting. I hear these stories every day. I had a financial advisor call me just a couple months ago. He said, Penny, I got to tell you this story. Worker on the railroads. He's worked on the railroads all his life. He's never made more than $60,000 in a year. He got his account statement. He's got $1 million in his retirement account. How'd he do that? Capital markets, investing in great businesses, putting his money away, living thoughtfully, putting his money away well over time. I hear other stories, incredible entrepreneurs and founders of companies and executives at companies who thoughtfully lead their businesses and think about the impact that they're making through the investment in capital markets, the impact that they're making on the people who work for them and on the communities where they live and work. They take that seriously. Those stories would not be possible without the existence of the capital markets and the free enterprise system. It's as simple as that. So this is what I mean when I say that the capital markets represent opportunity. They've been raising the fortunes of individuals and of society as a whole in a way that never existed prior to the birth of American-style capitalism. So here's the question. Remember, I said I was going to leave a question hanging in the air. What has to be true for this assertion, this win-win cycle of the markets, to be more true than it is today? Education, access to information, a long view about how to bring more people and good ideas into the markets. I'm pretty sure that the combined experience and action of the people in this room have got some answers to that question that I'm going to leave. So here's the second truth. Second truth is that capitalism benefits society in innumerable ways. Think about all the things that we readily have access to today, and they're affordable, that we didn't have many years ago. Or even a few years ago, cars, air travel, the internet, smartphones, can't live without that one, computers, television, experiences, the experience economy, experiences that we pay dearly for at places here in Florida. That's in addition to all the medical advances in our world that has extended life expectancy from the low 30s in 1900 to the 70s today. Those things would not be possible without the incentives of the capital markets. And the benefits go a lot deeper than that. At Edward Jones, we believe that business for good is good for business and for society. So to us, those two concepts are inextricably linked. That drive extends from our purpose, and it shows up in our actions and what we invest in to be more innovative and to sponsor more relationships with more people, all of our stakeholders. Now, why do we do this? Well, it seems like the right thing to do. Absolutely. And because there is mutual benefit for all the stakeholders that we serve. And it's you. It is all of those stakeholders who give us our license to operate. It's why we're giving our clients more options to engage in investing that aligns with their values and their goals. And through our Edward Jones Charitable Gift Fund, we offer our clients opportunities to support causes that are important to them and to do it in a way that helps their contributions go even further in the capital markets. Helping more clients live out their goals and purpose ensures that we endure as a commercial enterprise. There's another set of stakeholders that it's incredibly important. The 50,000 people who get up every morning, purpose-driven to support our clients. So we have a disaster relief fund. Our own associates contribute into this fund to help other associates who've been affected, devastated in some cases, by federally declared disasters. We've made a 5-point commitment to build a place of belonging for our associates and to create opportunities for people of color. And we continue to make progress advancing our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion at all levels of our organization. Why? Because we need the most talented and purpose-driven people in the world working to help make our clients and our firm successful. Now, if you remember back about our purpose statement that I just recited a few minutes ago, community is in there. And you can imagine why it is. We've got a client in every county. We got a brick and mortar location in 2/3 of those counties. We're everywhere. So what has community been to us? Where there's a community of folks who are devastated by Alzheimer's disease. 300,000 of our clients, you double that because it takes 2 caregivers for everyone who is suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia. There is no survivor of Alzheimer's yet. I'm a cancer thriver, thank God for the research that has happened there, and many of you have benefited from that. We're looking for the first survivor for Alzheimer's disease. On another front, our financial fitness program was established in 2020. We go into schools, we work with young people, we work with next generation investors to help them understand the financial markets and how they apply to them, and we intend to affect 1 million young people by the end of 2025. So let me tell you one more story that kind of crystallizes all of this. We have a very veteran financial advisor named Jim McKenzie. He's in Kearney, Nebraska. Anybody here from Nebraska? Great Midwestern place. So Jim served there for 50 years. And Jim told me this story one time. We were talking, he said, Penny, I intend to have the most millionaires per capita in Kearney, Nebraska than in any town in the United States. And then, you know, he let that sink in for a minute. He said, let me tell you why. Because if I am able to help people store their wealth in that way, get in touch with their values and their purpose, Kearney, Nebraska will have the best hospitals, the greatest schools, the most magnificent libraries, and the greatest social support system in our country. Kearney will be the place to live, work, invest, and for my kids and my grandkids to want to stay here. That's what building community through colleagues and clients and the capital markets and free market system is all about. Jim considered Kearney his town, and that's the way we think about where we are as Edward Jones community builders and investment professionals. So this isn't just about Edward Jones. There is a term now, stakeholder capitalism, and the premise is that it ensures that business exist for the long term. This is not a new idea. Anybody heard of Peter Drucker? The preeminent management consultant going back decades, who, by the way, was kind of on our unofficial kitchen cabinet and advised our managing partners going all the way back to Ted Jones. Peter Drucker said that the purpose of business is to improve society using the tools of business, creating a client, employing knowledge workers, and improving society through the free market system. Now, what's required to do that? Wait for it. Innovation and relationship. Good ideas and trust building. Leaders from Larry Fink at BlackRock to the Business Roundtable to leaders like you and me have led for this way in for decades and are continuing to lead this way today. So here's my question. The question hanging in the air. What has to be true for this assertion? The free market system benefits society. What has to be true in order for this to be more true in the future? Because it's powerful good. What does it need to be? A focus on more stakeholders, new kinds of partnerships among businesses, government, and education? Maybe those are some of the answers. Here's my third assertion. The third truth is that capitalism keeps economies prosperous over the long term, over that long arc. Businesses respond every day to the demands of the marketplace. Consumers then reward businesses that innovate and deliver what we want, or even discover things that we didn't know we wanted, but they tell us about them. Go back to the smartphone. There is a continuous renewal of our economy. It's fueled by constant innovation and finding ways to improve existing products and services and more efficient ways to create those products and services. Capitalism creates an inherent efficiency that drives that continuous improvement. It builds economic growth and it increases standards of living worldwide. There's a constant push to evolve. We feel this urgency all the time at Edward Jones to stay competitive, yes, but to live out our purpose to continue to improve more lives. I say this with a lot of humility, but to endure so successfully for 100 years with the same name on the door means our firm has continuously answered that call. Our whole industry is a great example of this kind of dynamic. What our clients are expecting from us has changed radically in recent years. The whole financial services system has. Our clients, you're looking for more than just investment advice. You're looking for financial advisors who turn their life plan into a financial plan and unleash possibility in their lives. So we're transforming some really fundamental things about our firm and our industry in order to deliver on that kind of service that our clients want today and will want in the future. We keep everything the same that really, really matters. Our partnership, our values, our core beliefs. But the role that our financial advisors is playing is changing, combining empathy and knowledge to serve our clients in a highly personalized way. We call this human-centered, complete wealth management. We're spending $1.5 billion on technology, investing our digital relationship with our clients, helping our back office run more efficiently, providing useful tools for our clients and for our financial advisors and branch teammates to use more effectively. These are not changes that we have to make. They're changes that we get to make in our continual effort to live out our purpose and to endure successfully in relationship with our clients, our colleagues, and our communities. That evolution that I just shared with you a little bit about is a great example of the goodness of our economy and the free market system at work. We will improve on the great work that we've been doing for generations, and our clients benefit from those changes as they get more of the kind of service that they truly need, as our colleagues have more opportunity to unleash their limitless talent, and in relationship in our communities to improve them and help them thrive. That's a virtuous circle. Okay, I'm about done, but I'm leaving you with the same question. What has to be true for this assertion that capitalism propels economies forward over the long term, continuously higher? What has to be true for that to be more true tomorrow? Because if we act as leaders on that question, everyone is going to be the better for the good answers that we come up with. So, opportunity is at the core of capitalism and stakeholder capitalism, which is absolutely not a new idea, brings with it even more opportunity for all of us. As a firm that works inside the capital markets every day, we see the impact that they can have on people's lives, one life at a time, one family at a time, one community at a time. Our firm has helped create lasting financial strength for a century. We've got a bird's eye view into the goodness of democracy and the free market system for 100 years. We intend to continue to be part of that cycle, helping more people, more communities thrive and prosper for at least another 100 years, innovating and build relationship. So I'm going to end here. I'm provoking you. I don't know if I have any amens left in the room yet. I want to provoke you as leaders, as community builders, as people who care about this community, about democracy, about our society. That question, what can we do in my business, right here in our community, to make these assertions more true for more people? So thanks for playing along with those assertions and that provocation. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. And I think we've got some time for some Q&A. So I'll invite David up to do that.
Well, thank you, Penny. Thank you, everyone. Our first question comes from one of our students. So how does Edward Jones react to uncertain market conditions like markets today?
Okay, I love everything about that question and that one of our students asked it. How do you react in uncertain market conditions like we have today? Well, on one hand, in the same way that you would have reacted over every other period of uncertainty over the last 100 years. You get advice, you don't make emotional decisions, you check the decisions that you've made up to now to make sure that they're still true, that your risk tolerance is still where it was before, you take a deep breath, and you remain very calm. This has been rewarded cycle after cycle, administration after administration, up and down in every market over the last 100 years. It is painfully basic. Everybody looks for a trick, and there's not a trick. So take the emotion out of investing. Look for what you want your long-term possibility to be. Get good advice. Stay calm.
Great. And a follow-on question. What advice would you give to our female students on successes in corporate America?
Depends on what you call success. What I call success, I combine with significance. Success, I say, can be counted sometimes. Significance is felt in the impact that one is having on other stakeholders, on other relationships, on consumers, on investors, on the people that you work with. And so the advice that I give to everyone, and it was posited from from a gender standpoint, is get in touch with who you are, what you think of as success and significance, what your purpose is, what your why is, because you're going to be faced in your career with moments when you wonder why you're doing what you're doing, and then you question where you're doing it to make sure it's still the right place and the right why. Get in touch with yourself first. Build your skill. And I don't mean just technical skill. I mean skills around empathy, listening more than we talk. Innovation requires imagining something that you have not experienced in your own life yet and imagining a better idea for other people. Get in touch with that definition of success and significance, and then be tenacious. Recognize it's a long game. I've been doing this for 35 years. I've got 6.5 more years to go, and I've been taking notes from Susan about how to continue to make an impact after I'm done with this gig. Get in touch with yourself, find out what you love, build your skill and your people skills, your empathy, and then stick with it. Yeah.
Good advice for us all. There were several questions regarding the Federal Reserve's response to inflation. Can you speak to just what you can speak to in that format? Yeah.
I am very proud to be part of the Federal Reserve system. The Federal Reserve, as you know, has a dual mandate, stable prices and full employment. The way that mandate has been achieved over years has changed, and it's changed dramatically over the past 2 years, impacted by COVID-19 and impacted by the hangover from the great financial crisis over 10 years ago. The Federal Reserve has a trick right now, and I'm not saying anything out of school. Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, has said this. The Federal Reserve has got a trick right now. Tame inflation and not slow down an expansion. That's tricky. We know that, right? They are using all the tools that they have, and as Jay Powell says, there are other tools that the Federal Reserve does not have. The Federal Reserve's tools are those of monetary policy, not fiscal policy. I'll just close by saying I'm very proud of being a part of the Federal Reserve. The leadership is very strong. It has to be very nimble in order to respond to the data that we don't get on a monthly basis now. We get on an hour-by-hour, day-by-day basis. The agility of the Federal Reserve System in order to use its tools to tamp down inflation without bending too far the curve of an expansion is a lesson right now that we're all living through, and we'll get to talk about the history of it in just a couple of years.
Thank you. There were several questions about companies going woke like Disney and Major League Sports teams. Can you speak to the challenges of navigating the threats and opportunities in the diverse and inclusive space?
What was the first part of that question, David, one more time?
There were several questions about companies having to navigate a woke culture. Can you speak to the threats and opportunities to a large company today in that space?
Yeah. Well, that one's simple. The threat is if you don't see what's happening in the world and respond to it effectively. The opportunity is seeing what's happening in the world and responding to it really, really effectively through, wait for it, innovation and relationship building. So our world is becoming more diverse. It's becoming smaller. And it's requiring us, consumers are requiring us to hyper-personalize to them. It does not work anymore to look at a group of consumers in groups of millions and think that what's going to satisfy one is going to satisfy all. Now, that is the way the Industrial Revolution built capitalism to begin with. If we look at the arc of the past 200 years, we see that. But today, we're in what's called an experience economy. Not a product economy, not even a service economy. We live in an experience economy. You pay for experiences that are completely intangible, that create memories. That's why Kodak got in such trouble, didn't they? They thought they were selling film when what they were really selling was experiences. And so hyper-personalizing to individuals' experiences means that we've got to be attuned to each individual. No matter what walk of life, ethnic background, gender, point of view, our job as businesses, if we're going to continue to innovate and build trust with all of our stakeholders, is to recognize that we're not all alike. Thank goodness. Our country has prospered on that since its founding. So there's the threat, but I see it in it a huge opportunity.
Going back to your Federal Reserve experience, should we be concerned about a national or governmental digital currency?
Oh, wow. This could be a really interesting conversation, right? Boy, there are a lot of ways to come at this. And again, I am not speaking for the Federal Reserve, but I will tell you what the Federal Reserve is doing. The Federal Reserve is studying whether the U.S. dollar, as the reserve currency of the world, should innovate just a little bit to be more digitally enabled. By the way, just about everything in your life is more digitally enabled, isn't it? Many of us still carry a checkbook. Do our students know what a checkbook is? Maybe only because we ask you for a voided check from time to time. My daughters who are in their 30s say, I don't carry a checkbook, I don't have a voided check. I use a vast array of payment systems, digital payment systems. I don't use cash anymore. By the way, 16% of the transactions that occur in our country occur with paper money and coin. 16% of the total number of transactions. Only about 9% of the value of everything that occurs in our country is traded with paper or coin. So that says to me that actually our currency, if we want it to continue to be relevant, does probably need to be digitally enabled in some way. But we've gotten used to something in this country, and that's that our money is stable. It is a stable value, sovereign currency. That wait for it, was innovated on about 200 years ago and has tremendous trust built into it. That's why the US dollar is the world's reserve currency. And there's a fight for that placement right now, isn't there? There's a fight for that placement with other sovereign nations who think about economy and the free market system in a completely different way, who are innovating around their currencies. So again, I'm not speaking for the Fed. I'm saying that if I look at it from that arc, we probably need to do some innovation, but we need to not change what matters, sovereign currency, with a tremendous amount of trust built into what that dollar bill stands for.
Well, Penny, on behalf of the Forum Club, I'd like to thank you for today. I know you all had some other questions, and we want to make sure we get you out on time, but if you'd like to come up and talk with Penny afterwards, I'm sure she'd be happy to talk with you for a little bit.